Hey, care for a drench, son? It'll brighten your scan.
You're still here, huh?
Aldetha's testament, I see. Studying some way to get rid of poor old Blackbeard, are you?
How'd you guess?
I have been observing thee, and I note that you have a bent for getting yourself into trouble.
I get into trouble? Oh, that is really rich. Who do you suppose put me here?
But you think I like this mortal life of yours? Like, there doesn't seem to be any honest joy anymore. Your modern life of yours seems to have got small. Everything's puckered up. You call this a four-poster bed? Get away there.
Yikes. I'm down. You won't get no comfort out of that. If it's Aldetha laid that spell, you can mark it a good one. Without no loophole.
Now, wait a minute. Mrs. Stowcroft told me that curse. Something about you having to dwell forevermore in limbo.
Limbo.
Something. Until there be found in you some spark of human goodness.
Aldetha was bright as brass. She knew me like a book.
Yeah, well, you must have done something good. Did you ever pat a dog?
Dog?
Yeah.
Pat it?
Yes.
No, I never did pat it.
Did you ever help an old lady across the street?
Silly.
Anything. No,
we're sunk, you and me.
Dead as pork, might as well.
Face up to it.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Arrgh! Welcome to Invasion of the Remake, mateys. It is Talk Like a Pirate episode.
No, it's not.
No?
I can't do that for a whole episode.
What do you mean, you scurvy dog?
So I'm the tight-ass track coach and you're the pirate then?
No, I can't do that either.
Yeah,
I didn't think so.
I'm Jason Bishop, host of Invasion of the Remake, and of course with me today as always is Sam Stepanenko, the track coach.
The track coach.
I am leaving that in. Like, what is the requirement to be a crack coach?
Like, oh, I'm sure that there's a role out there somewhere.
No, you're not lying in the ditch. Like, you're not selling me on that.
You need to shuffle better. You need to shuffle better.
Yeah. Your eyes, no, roll them back in your head a little further.
We are so getting in trouble for this. This is like,
you've got too many teeth.
Yes, please seek help if you are suffering from...
Yeah,
we don't want to tell you how to do your crack.
Our coaching is how to help you get off it, yes.
Yeah, I was about to say, you could be like the anti-crack coach, where it'd be like, no, I can help you. It's like the anti-crack coach, like, no, go out there and run laps instead of doing crack. You can do that.
You can do it.
Trish Coughlin, everybody. She'll be here all week.
I be Trish Coughlin.
And of course, I think waiting out there in the wings on the water maybe is our Billy Bones, Jeff Omega.
Ooh, look at, let me see your hand. I see doom.
Oh, you're the fortune teller.
damn it. Oh, I missed an opportunity.
You really did.
Really did. All right.
Yeah, Elsa Lancaster, fortune teller.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about probably a forgotten Disney classic here called Blackbeard's Ghost from 1968. And it had been a long time for me. Like, as a kid, I would have seen this as a two-parter on The Wonderful World of Disney. And even when I pitched it to you guys, I think Trish was the one who said, isn't that a TV movie?
Yeah.
Which it was, and it did get a theatrical, but before we were born. And it did quite well. I never did hear the budget for this movie, but domestically it did just under $11 million and worldwide gross of a little over $21.5 million. So,
wow,
that did really well. And even in video rentals, it was somewhere in the $5 million range.
Wow.
Well, it deserves more attention. And I'm going to say this right now. How much of Peter Ustinov's performance did Johnny Depp steal for Jack Sparrow?
Right?
It's like, true.
It's astounding. Like, you just, the line delivery and the weird asides all feels like Depp watched this movie and went, okay, I'm going to take that, that, and that, and then amp it up to 11 or 12 and make him kind of a drunk.
You know, he probably, for research, was like, I'm going to be in a Disney movie. I'm going to watch all of the Disney pirate movies and then the best version of all of them.
Yeah. Well, famously, he just took it from a drunk rock star, but you can certainly see some of the parallels. It was funny because I did watch a particular Pirates after I watched this one because I had an idea and it'll play later. But I'm thinking about how Johnny Depp as a pirate, like in real pirate times, probably would have just been drawn and quartered and killed for being a coward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But this is movie piracy, so where it's been glorified. I mean, Blackbeard himself only had about a 2-year run as a pirate before...
Yeah.
Before being caught and beheaded.
So. Yeah, no, his reputation is much bigger than his actual career.
Yeah. Yeah, so he only had a 2-year run as a pirate, but he also wasn't one known for torture because his reign of terror was more through fear, thus the smoke coming out of his beard. It was usually the fear that drove all of his. And he had a pretty great campaign for his time, but I think the real definition of a successful pirate is one that never got caught. Mm-hmm. So if they have never got caught or killed, then that's probably why we don't know about them.
And I think a lot of the best pirates actually became privateers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what most people don't realize is most were actually working for England and used as almost another army in defense of the kingdom. So, I don't know. I was doing some piracy reading, and I mean, let's face it, the movie pirates are kind of glorified, much like movie old gangsters as well. They've been kind of glorified as something fanciful, but these guys were thieves and murderers and torturers, and you think about buried treasure, I think there's only one pirate that we could actually track of having done that.
Captain Kidd?
I think it was Kidd, and... For the most part, the pirates spent it because, let's face it, your life expectancy wasn't great as a pirate.
No,
so you were going to go out and have a blast and have fun while you weren't out there on sea doing all that horrible shit. Yeah, that's why you're not finding there's not a lot of treasure to be found. And that's something the film of Blackbeard, they do mention a treasure that people keep looking for. And we hear about these of other pirates and treasure hunters looking for a treasure that may not exist and probably doesn't.
No, I think you're right. Actually, if you watch the TV series Black Sails, that really does sort of make the pirates more real to me because they talk about that. And mm-hmm. there is the fact that they never really have any money because they get it, they go ashore, they spend it, and then they have to go back out again to get more money because they spent all their money.
Yeah, and there was that port in Nassau was a real port for pirates where they would hang their hats and get laid and gamble and drink, and that was a real place. Black Sails mixes the lore of piracy and the mythology of piracy really well with some of the real pirates because they'll have fictional ones like Long John Silver as well as real ones like Anne Bonny. So
I guess the real earmark of piracy is bad money management.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, piracy exists today, and it's a $16 billion a year industry for them. So,
oh, no. I'm talking about like oldie timey pirates. They were bad at it.
Oh, yeah. Maybe bad at saving their money. Yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, they're really good.
Yeah.
There's just better pirates now.
And we just don't really hear about it here in Canada, but piracy on the sea has never gone away. You just think about all the cargo that's going back and forth all the time. Yeah, that's probably a big industry these days.
Yeah, Captain Phillips. I am the captain now.
before we get into the film, I want to know what you guys thought of this. Like, had you seen this as a kid? Like, I'm guessing, like, the only one I could think of here that might not have seen this as a kid, because there was no Wonderful World of Disney when Jeff was born. But had you seen this before, Jeff?
You know what? Interestingly enough, no. But I was very surprised that I hadn't seen it, because I was really into a lot of these, like, 60s era, 70s era made for TV, or I guess, you know, theatrical live action Disney movies. And whenever, you know, we would go to the Blockbuster or VHQ, I would always rent the tapes of them. But for whatever reason, Blackbeard's Ghost was never one that I saw in circulation wherever I lived. So it was one that kind of escaped my notice. But I really, really like a lot of the people involved. And the director has done a lot of Disney movies that I really like, including ones that we've covered before.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting you said that. Sam, do you remember VHS of this? Because we both worked in the video era. In video stores, and I'm struggling to remember if we had a video cassette. I'm sure there was.
Well, and I'm sure there was. I know there was.
I saw rental numbers.
Yeah, but I was one of those ones that didn't pop up very often. I know that some of the stores that I managed had a copy of it, but it's like, oh yeah, that's cool. I remember that movie existing, but I don't remember the movie itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as we were saying before everybody else came on, is that I was watching going, I know I've seen this. I'm sure I've seen it on Wonderful World of Disney. But the only part that really sort of went peaked of like a memory was the track and field scene.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember anything else about the movie.
Honestly, it was just a vagueness of familiarity for me. Because when I think about the Dean Jones stuff, I was like a sucker for the Herbie movies. And I loved those. And I remember really liking this. Like, it did instill good memories in me. And I clearly wasn't one I had seen as often as, like, the Herbie movies. But Dean Jones was, out of those family Disney movies, was my favorite of all those leads. So,
me too.
Yeah.
That Darn Cat was one of my, like, most watched live-action movies. It was so fun.
Yeah.
Dean Jones, like, when I was watching this movie, I got that feeling I got like when I was a little kid. Like, I always felt so happy when I saw Dean Jones on the screen, because he was just, I don't know. I don't know what it was about him as a leading actor, but I was like, yes, I want to go on this journey with this nice man.
And that's just it. He invokes kindness, and it was something that he did live by. I mean, he had his demons, but he had was a kind of a born again Christian, and that also kind of informed his roles, and he got less roles because of not wanting to compromise on his beliefs. So when you see something like that in this movie, where he doesn't even want to take credit for his team winning because the ghost helped them cheat, like, that shows his convictions and values. And I kind of get the feeling that's who Dean Jones was.
Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, yeah. And I respect anybody who's willing to stand by their beliefs that strongly and still produce good work when he does get the work.
Yeah.
You know, and I completely didn't realize that he was also the villain in Beethoven in the 90s.
Wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Dean Jones. He was the bad veterinarian in Beethoven. He was like trying to kill Beethoven.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Really crazy, playing against type and everything.
Huh. I honestly don't remember that either.
but I mean, so far associated from any of his other roles, like, no wonder I didn't notice that plus 30 years.
Boy, and that's one of the really rare times we hear about him being a villain in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to run the trailer for this, and I could not find a theatrical trailer for it, but I did find a pretty rough TV trailer for it. It must have come off of VHS. There's a lot of static in it, but it's got some good voiceover. It's good for a podcast. So I'm going to run that, and we'll be right back, and we'll start diving into Blackbeard's Ghost.
When Godolphin College hired their new track coach, they had no idea his assistant would be a ghost.
Blackbeard's Ghost.
A Blackbeard Ghost.
We meet again.
But then again, neither did the coach.
I want nothing to do with you.
And when this ragtag twosome team up together, they redefine the term school spirit.
What are you trying to do, kill yourself? I like to think about that, isn't it?
Suzanne Fleshette, Dean Jones, and Peter Ustinov star in the wacky comedy Blackbeard's Ghost.
Okay, that was Disney's Blackbeard's Ghost from 1968, based on the book by Ben Stahl, with the screenplay by Bill Walsh and Dean Daugherty. Bill Walsh, not the Unsolved Mysteries guy? Was that the Unsolved Mysteries? It was one of the murder shows. It was a different
Bill Walsh. Wasn't it Robert Walsh?
Maybe.
But there is a Bill Walsh actor as well.
Yeah. I just, the name rings a bell. Anyway, we probably talked about him in episode 147 because he wrote Absent-Minded Professor and Flubber, and or had credit for Flubber because he wrote the original script. We also talked about him in episode 151.
That was Bedknobs and Broomsticks. That was a fun one, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was. And Don DeGrady also had a hand in that script. He also wrote the original Lady and the Tramp, which we will probably talk about somewhere down the road because there is a live-action remake currently on Disney Plus, which is probably where the bulk of us watched this movie. Go check it out. Disney, sponsor us. Director Robert Stevenson, he's a mainstay at Disney. He did things like Mary Poppins, Old Yeller, The Love Bug, but of course, most famously, because we've already covered them, episode 107, Absent-Minded Professor, and 151, Bedknobs and Broomsticks. So this is his third kick at the cat at the in the show here.
Yeah, he's becoming a regular.
He is becoming a regular.
And, you know, he did have such a good repertoire of Disney movies in his catalog.
For the most part, some big hits, too. Mm-hmm. You know, Sam and I were talking before the show started about how the live actions didn't quite take off like the animation stuff did. Some of it's been remade. Absent-Minded Professor wound up being a good one for them, and I think they did a couple movies in that franchise. The Herbie movies was probably their biggest one. It's surprising they didn't do a follow-up to this one because it was very successful.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it never took off. Like, their live action didn't quite take off in the same way as their animated stuff did.
Yeah, I don't think it was like until the 90s that they really kind of broke out of that Disney's an animation studio type of mold. Like, everything else was Buena Vista, and this was too. Or Touchstone, like in the 80s and 90s, that's sort of where their live action dropped rather than quote-unquote Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't until like the Pirates movies and stuff like that where it's like, oh, Disney can do live action.
Mm-hmm. When you think about it, it's really tough to do like a live action G. You know, you got to stay away from any kind of sexual innuendo and obviously language or anything else, so trying to make that as friendly as possible is tough. But when I watched this movie, it occurred to me they did approach this movie and a large portion of a lot of the other ones in the same way that they approach their animations. So they'll have like sequences that just feel like, okay, here's the Looney Tunes short with the Keystone Cop and the ghost torturing this poor cop. And that's a moment that could have been a segment that they would have pulled out and you could have just ran it as a cartoon, which they often did pull things out of movies and run them as kind of mini cartoons within the Wonderful World of Disney on Sundays. So I was thinking about that, and I'm like, yeah, the rule still kind of applies in this movie as well. There's lots of little segments. I mean, the scenes are so much more clear as scenes, and you can just clip them, and they're just enjoyable as that scene.
So I was reading an article not that long ago, which was basically talking about how comedies, as it stands today, are basically a dead genre, and how Step Brothers is maybe one of the last examples of a comedy getting a very high budget and also doing very well at the box office. But there's basically more and more surefire bets that they can do for movies that will, you know, make them $1 billion. So comedies are not really something that is worth taking the risk on. But when I was watching this movie, that whole era of Disney movies really came to mind. And that's like all the type of comedy that, I don't know, I really like to see. And there's a lot of really good comedies that are even more modern that follow a similar model where it's like, you're right, it's like a bunch of fun scenes that are all connected together narratively. And a lot of things that people put thought into that do work on their own. And there's a lot of jokes and things that set up throughout. And it's not a bad way to make a movie.
No, not at all. And it has a more classic way of building something, and a lot of older movies are kind of built that way. But I kind of like these older comedies because of it. Disney specifically. Mm-hmm. All right, the cast here, starring Peter Ustinov as Captain Bluebeard, and we talked about him first in episode 44.
That was Logan's Run. He wasn't in it very much, but he was in it.
He was in it, and then again in episode 183.
One of my favorite ones we've covered so far.
I love that fucking movie. So good.
It was so good. We're No Angels.
Yeah.
The original.
With the original, yeah.
Bogart, yeah. The remake was not. It was very mean-spirited.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I highly recommend the original one. That's a great one for Christmas time. Dean Jones as Steve Walker, the lead here being haunted by Captain Blackbeard, most well-known for the Love Bug movies. And Jeff mentioned, what was the one you mentioned with the cat? That darn cat? That was
yeah, he was in That Darn Cat.
Yeah, and I think he was in Shaggy D.A. I'm trying to remember all the stuff he did, but there's a lot of them, and definitely a Disney mainstay. Suzanne Plachet was Joanne Parker, and we actually never talked about her before, but she was goes back quite a ways. She was in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, and of course, mm-hmm. best known for being on The Bob Newhart Show. Elsa Lancaster was Emily Stocroft, and yeah, she was wonderful, and Jeff's impression at the beginning of the show was almost spot on. She goes back quite a ways. Like, she was in Bride of Frankenstein as Mary Shelley.
Mm-hmm. And The Bride.
No, was she The Bride as well?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That I didn't know. That's quite something, and that's a very iconic part. But we have actually talked about her, and I think I probably even mentioned those same facts when we talked about her in episode 152.
The Big Clock.
The Big Clock.
Also, No Way Out, because they changed the name for this one. That one.
Yeah,
but
yeah, the remake was No Way Out. Joby Baker was Silky Seymour. Boy, the name didn't get better either way. he's probably best known as a regular in the Gidget movies, and there were quite a few of those. Elliot Reed was the TV commentator, and I seem to want to say he was the same part in episode 107, The Absent-Minded Professor.
Yeah.
I think he played the exact same part as a TV commentator. But
I think he did in the other one that we talked about him in as well.
Episode 232?
Yeah. It was an uncredited role in that one, but yeah.
That was the Mad World.
/ Rat Race.
Rat Race. Richard Deacon was Dean Wheaton, and we're finally getting away from Family Fair here. We talked about him in episode 148.
Piranha.
And 194.
That was Invaders from Mars, and that was kind of Family Fair-ish.
Ish.
And at least the original, really recognizable. Yeah. He's really recognizable. When you see him, you're like, oh yeah, I've seen him in stuff before. Like, he's one of those sort of iconic supporting actors.
Oh, are you saying he's one of the original, that guy I saw in that thing that one time?
Absolutely.
Go get the t-shirt. Where do you get the t-shirt?
At our TeePublic store, which is teepublic.com/store/invasion of the remake.
Thank you.
Waiting for mine in the mail.
There you go. I've got some masks coming too, so you should get yours as well. Norman.
I think he's also the reoccurring character throughout a lot of those live action Disney movies. I think he is also that same Dean in all of the Kurt Russell Disney movies.
Oh, that's very possible. The computer wore tennis shoes, something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. Oh, that'd be interesting to see if they're even in the same college or if he just gets bumped around from college to college.
Yeah.
Norman Grabowski was Virgil, and he was in The Towering Inferno. Hank Jones was Gudger Larkin. And I thought this character was going to play more because he was like in the first major scene with Dean Jones, as Dean Jones is driving into town and stops at the gas station. And this is one of the college students and works at the gas station and gets a ride back into town with Dean. And they get talking about the team. And that's when Dean realizes the track team's a fucking mess.
And his character was so engaging. Like, I wanted more of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about to say that.
Yeah, I was about to say that too. Like, he was so delightful to me. I'm like going, oh, what a sweet boy. Show us more of him.
And then he disappears. We get like little spurts of him near the end is when we actually get to the track meet, but not to the same quantity. It's just like, all right, you got your shot, kid. Get out of here. We don't see him again. And I'm like, really? I thought we'd see more of him. So we might have to fix that. And he was in another Disney, The Cat from Outer Space. Those cats get everywhere, man.
I love that movie. That's such a good movie.
I know I'm going to start hitting a bunch of these on Disney Plus because, like, as I keep seeing these names, I'm like, that was good, that was good, that was good. I love these as a kid. And so far, I love them as adults as well. And Michael Conrad was Pinetop Purvis. Whew. He was the football coach, and he's probably best known for being on Hill Street Blues, but we probably mentioned him in episode 156.
The Longest Yard. And it's funny because when I was watching this, I'm like, I've seen him in something. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I, as soon as I saw Longest Yard, I was like, I could see.
Yeah, he was in the Burt Reynolds one. Yeah. Yeah, so that's our primary cast here for Blackbeard's Ghost. Now let's start getting into this movie here. And let's
more connections, Jay.
Oh, do you? That's as far as I went because the rest were like characters that didn't get names. So
I always do the first page of IMDb. I got George Murdoch, again, not a named character, but he was in Sword and the Sorcerer, episode 41.
Cool.
And then I had Ned Glass. I recognized his name right away, which is why I went into his as well. And he was in episode 144, Charade. And he was also in episode 130, War of the Worlds.
Oh, wow. So, this is a busy, busy movie for us.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Ned Glass, I mean, he's got 300 credits. No, usually.
You actually went through them this time. Well, you bothered to check, so that's good. I didn't check those ones. You know, when I went into this, I didn't think we were going to have a whole lot of crossover, and we got a boatload of crossover.
Yeah,
so
we did.
This is all over the place. Okay, so this movie, essentially what happened is there is a curse that has been placed on Blackbeard, who is trapped in limbo and is resurrected by a spell. And the spell book was found in this bed warmer, in which you would put hot coals in this tray and then stick it under your bed to warm it. And he had won this at an auction. And the spell book was hidden in the handle, which he accidentally sat on. And then, of course, in a very Evil Dead way, somebody read the spell out loud, and the dead arose. Yeah. Now, the auction is important because this is where Silky comes in, and he is intimidating the bidders not to bid because they are trying to, these old ladies are trying to raise money to save the inn and pay off the mortgage on the inn. And Silky doesn't want that because he wants to buy the land and build a nice big hotel there.
Casino, because the land
is... Yes, casino.
Yeah, because the land is now an island and it wasn't when the hotel was built, which I thought was a really interesting device. Mm-hmm. Is that because it falls outside of the purview of the local law, so he can run a gambling casino without repercussion. It doesn't have to be under like a backroom casino.
Yeah, because this was not an estate that condoned that sort of thing. So it would have been big money to be put in a casino in a state that's, where the laws didn't apply to him.
Exactly.
And he was already running a backroom casino elsewhere.
And all the other criminal enterprises in the city from the sounds of it.
Yeah. He's probably the most cartoon villain of them all in this thing.
He was so much fun, though.
Yeah, he kind of was. Yeah.
I mean, and that's what Disney does, is they always make their bad guy really over-the-top cartoonish. But
yeah, they did. They were great.
That's funny. As we were watching this, I'm like, oh, man, if James Remar was 30 years older, I would cast him as Silky. Because James Remar looks like Silky did in that movie.
Oh, this is your I wish I could have used him casting?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right about that now that I think about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, he would have been good 30 years ago. Yeah. That's cool. Basically, what's going on is Blackbeard is haunting Dean Jones's character, Steve Walker, and... Actually, Steve, prior to this, like, the whole movie's been kind of laid out in that reading with Emily Stowcraft, Elsa Lancaster's character, at the beginning of the movie. He's going to stay at the inn, having just fresh come into town, and he's trying to just get his room, and she is in full-blown fortune-teller mode.
Like, yes, she's having a lot of fun.
Although, yeah, all those old ladies are just a little bit off.
Yes, yes, they are. And I cast about half a dozen of them.
Oh, my God.
Those women are living my dream. They're living my future dream.
I would love to run, like, a pirate inn. That would be awesome, man.
Well, when I was watching the movie at the beginning of the movie where the young track kid, whose name has already escaped me, he's explaining that everybody else.
How do you forget a name like Gudger?
Because I do. I can barely remember my own. Come on. But yeah, he really explains that people don't stay there anymore. And I'm like, why wouldn't you? That place is freaking cool.
Yeah, it's like everything's right? a theme room. That is amazing. Yeah,
and I mean, the outside looks incredible. Like they yeah, have it sort of as a painted background, but I want to see that as a set.
I want to see it as a hotel. I want to go stay there.
Yeah.
I want to stay in an old ship's cabin that's been repurposed as a hotel room.
Well, when you think about all these haunted tourist attractions now, these old hotels that actually use the haunting as a selling feature, like, man, that'd be on Ghost Adventures.
They'd be cleaning up if yeah. they could do
you
that.
You couldn't shut Blackbeard up. He'd be talking through that ovulus like crazy.
I do like the fact that they established that he's lonely.
Yeah. Yeah, he says he's been trapped in limbo for 200 years. Now, interesting fact, this movie debuted in 1968, which was the 250th anniversary of Blackbeard's death. So, weird little factoid. That'll win you a Trivia Pursuit.
There you go, yes.
Yeah, I did really like how, you know, and there's the very traditional approach to Blackbeard, which is, you know, the one that's more like the Robert Louis Stevenson version. But this Blackbeard is kind of like a little bit more pitiful, a little bit more ridiculous, and a little bit more like maybe they were going for this is the ghost of the real Blackbeard. And the one that you've heard about is like his legend has grown much bigger than he was, kind of like what you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah. And they do kind of talk about his legend being bigger than he was. Now, rather than being horrible and evil and never done a good thing in his life, and which he kind of feels regretful about when he's, because Blackbeard's a bit of a blubberer, but mm-hmm. he cries a lot. But I would say he's more naughty than evil. So mm-hmm. the curse is a little wonky in that regard. But I mean, you can't do a children's movie and then talk about all the horrible shit this real life pirate did. So
true.
I get it, and I want to keep our version still firmly entrenched within kind of the Disney movie lore.
I agree. Yeah, and I think that, yeah, the thing about Blackbeard, or at least this version of Blackbeard, is it's not that he's evil, it's that he's selfish and he doesn't do things for other people without a motivation. And I think that's sort of where you want to lean into, is the fact that he's selfish, not bad.
Yeah, when Dean Jones talks to him when they're in jail after Blackbeard tries to learn how to drive a car, which, ironically, he didn't have near as much trouble with the motorcycle. Anyway. Like the motorcycle seemed to be much easier for him to figure out, but
well, Steve,
it got them
Steve
arrested.
Wasn't fighting with him.
What's that? Oh, yeah, they were fighting with him. Yeah, they were fighting with them, each other, and so that lands them in jail, and so they get a talking about his past. And when he realizes, oh, you have to do one good thing to cross over to heaven or wherever your pirates go, not go back to limbo. And he's like, well, why don't you give up your treasure? Why would I do that? And then he cops to the fact that what treasure? There's no treasure. There's no buried treasure. And then he feels bad for all the people who were trying to treasure hunt a treasure that didn't exist. And then starts crying again. He's really emotional.
He is really emotional.
Well, they do establish sort of at the end that he has been in limbo alone, not talking to anybody for 200 years. And he's very upset. He's like, nobody's heard my voice for 200 years.
Yeah, we can
and
identify
that would
with
drive
that
you
a little bit.
Absolutely. It's not been 200 years. It has felt like 200 years, but it has not physically been 200 years.
You mean this hasn't always been our existence?
Oh, there was people you could see in 3D outside.
Oh.
And you could hug them and touch them and be like, hey, I love you in real life.
It's a vague memory. Seems so long ago.
It could happen again, but we don't know.
You know, it could happen again, but people need to wear their masks. And if they don't have their masks, you know where to get them.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Tee Public.
Tee Public. We got some cool ones there. Get some invasion masks.
And at this point, I'm like, you can get our mask, get our one mask, and then get a few other masks from other places, you know.
But buy ours first.
Yeah, buy ours first, but, you know, have some spares.
Yeah, absolutely. Then there's Susan Plachette. She's a teacher at the same college that Dean Jones is the new coach at, and initially their meeting goes very well. It's very flirtatious, and it seems like the inn, despite not being busy, is very busy. At least the bar part. It seems like everybody seems to go there. She's also the one trying to save the inn and kind of heading this venture to save this inn. I'm not sure. Is she related to one of the old ladies? Is that why she's doing it? Or is she just...
never established that. No. I couldn't see that.
So I thought we could maybe make a better connection there, more motivation for it. But she's just a kind person who's trying to do a good thing for this town of Godolphin. Godolphin.
Yeah, strange name.
It is, but I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I did too. It's just a strange name, though.
Yeah. She's spearheading this, and I really liked when Dean Jones just kind of, she's standing in front of the kissing booth. It's basically another fundraiser type scenario that ends with the auction we were talking about. And sees this hot girl and throws down a buck and lays one on her. She's like, yeah, this is in my booth. I'm just here helping set up.
Well, it sets up a great joke for the rest of the movie as well.
Yeah.
Because they have that really passionate $5 kiss. Yeah. And then every time they go to kiss for the rest of the movie, it keeps getting interrupted.
Yeah.
Right. Until the very end. And I love that. I thought that was a really great sort of setup. It's like, okay, they get this really great kiss and then they can't do it when he's not paying for it.
Yeah.
Until the last possible moment.
Yeah. And she really takes a liking to Dean Jones's character because Dean Jones doesn't like the intimidation. Like he gets volunteered for a couple of bids to get the bidding going by her. So she's having some fun with him a little bit. And it's kind of this weird long distance during the auction flirting going on, which I kind of thought was really cute and well written. And then Silky's running around telling people not to bid after that first item got a half decent bid. And then when Silky gets to Dean Jones, he just bids out of spite. He's like, well, fuck you, dude. You're not going to tell me what to do.
Well, no, Silky Jones,
I love that.
Yeah, Silky Jones comes up to him and says, he's like, I wouldn't bid on anything else. And he's like, why not? And Silky's like, I don't want you to. $200. Because he's kind of like, want all you want, fucker. I'm going ahead.
Right? Yeah, that'd be my reaction too.
No, and I think that's a good allegory for bullying and the correct response to bullying. I mean, to sort of take it into maybe deeper territory. But, I mean, the fact that he does not allow a bully to intimidate him in that moment and instead openly defies him in a very public way is a really good way to sort of address bullying.
And it could, you know what, this could bleed over kind of into, like, his track coaching. Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure some of those kids from the other schools are telling the Godolphins, like, you suck, you're terrible. Like, they're probably being very mean to them. And he could, like, bring that in.
The football coaches.
Yeah, the football coaches as well, and be like, no, and it doesn't matter that you bring in money, which is stupid, by the way. I'm going to give money to a university because they make people that can throw. Give us doctors. Give us scientists.
I think he was seeming to imply at the beginning that he was intentionally trying to make the track team fail, maybe even going so far as to, you know, put the students who are the least apt at track into track. And, you know, he would have done it, but the board, with their stupid tradition...
I get the feeling there was also a somewhat an unrealized love triangle angle because he had an interest. He's the one who drove Suzanne Plachette home after the auction. So you got the feeling there was a romantic interest there that kind of fizzles out as the movie progresses. But yeah, it does. You could see that kind of motivates him to like Dean Jones a little less.
I agree. And that did seem like it was sort of started and then just disappeared.
And that I think is one of the bigger failings of the movie is characters get dropped all the time. We talked about it with Gudger and now Purvis as well. At least the Dean he comes in a little bit later and plays in a minor supportive role, but he kind of sticks around. He is the Dean in the school and all. But even the school plot, like the whole point is to get these guys to win this race because a bet's been placed by Blackbeard on a team that has no chance in fucking hell of winning.
No, and that was one of my things we were talking about before too, is they set that up, but you only really get to see that one brief scene of them training and how sad they really are. And it's like, I guess in a kid, like if you're looking at it from a kid's point of view, that's all you really need, I guess. Or at least that's certainly what it seems to be the approach they took to it. It's
yeah. Like,
yeah, these guys are bad. You don't need to see any more about it. I think I would like to see more of the coach trying to make them a better team so that when it does come to that final moment, assuming that we stay with the whole track theme.
Okay. Well, this is a good time to pitch my idea. Okay. So Disney recently even had Blackbeard in a movie. That would have been Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
On Stranger Tides. I would like to tie that to this movie. It'd be that Blackbeard, because at least now we know he's done some horrible shit. That Blackbeard in that movie died for selfish reasons, trying to drink the water from the fountain of youth, and then a life force wound up being exchanged for his daughters. That's what he was hoping for. So Jack had switched the goblets, and that's how he died. Now, I would like that version because we already know his history, or at least the end of his life. We knew he was a bad dude.
I like that. I really do, actually. And that could maybe, how do I put this? It changes the setup for how he comes back a little bit. We'd have to work on that. But I like the idea of him, his demise being his own doing, with a little help from Jack.
Yeah. If there is one thing to say about that Blackbeard, though, which I think is kind of it was head scratching at the time, and every time Blackbeard comes up, I still like think about it. Is there like, you know, Blackbeard from history? He was one of the most legendary pirates. Did all this crazy stuff. You know what? Let's not use any of that. The reason he's cool: zombie crew, magic sword. Let's go with it.
Well, he did have a hoodoo priest on it, so you get the feeling he was kind of trained to that. But that's where we can have some fun. Maybe that cutlass being the magic thing is what it was. I mean, we can still have one of the wives that curses him. We don't know what happened before that movie because he was already near the end of his life anyway. He was an old man.
I mean, Ian McShane is a great actor.
Yeah. So, I mean, we gotta, if we're doing it, we're playing it within the established Disney lore. And this gives an opportunity because we do talk about live action Disney's. The Marvels do well, the Pirates do well, but there's not a lot of other ones, right? So if they can build kind of a branching thing from their Pirates franchise, that's not a bad way to go, where it's kind of set in the same universe, but present day. And now we have an opportunity to redeem that character. And I love Ian McShane, so I'd love to see that character get redeemed. So he would be on a redemption arc. And I would like it in such a way where he thinks there's an object that can resurrect him. So there's some selfishness involved. Because that's the one thing that did bother me. There's no real arc for Blackbeard in this movie. And I'd like to see some selfishness and him turn away his chance for resurrection to help somebody.
I like that conceit a lot. I really do. I think that's really great. And I love the idea of Ian McShane. Because he can do the sort of the comedic asides, much like Ustinov did, very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so he can add that humor, even if it wasn't really present in his appearance in the Pirates movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would hurt the movie because it is like one of the least liked pirate movies? Do you think people would not want to see it because they'd be like, oh, well, I have to watch the Pirates movie I already didn't see to watch this one?
Well, that's the thing. You don't have to. It would be an extra, right? They just talk about Blackbeard doing bad shit. And if you still had the same character, you can make that connection, but you don't have to go overboard in making that connection. So, because you want it to stand alone as another movie, as its own movie, right? And not require you to see it. And I get why people, I mean, they're getting tired of the Pirates thing. Their big problem is they keep bringing back Jack Sparrow, who they probably should just try to do clean the slate whole cloth.
Now, that was a pretty weak movie. Do you think that you could up the ante and it's the ghost of Jack Sparrow?
No, I'm done with Jack Sparrow. But I'm
going to have to go a hard no as well.
Yeah. I mean, I bet you that would sell better.
I mean, if there was one that I would choose as a studio, I mean, unless it wasn't explicitly tied. I mean, Ian McShane is a great choice, regardless. Because, I mean, he can do comedy. He's in a lot of comedy. Yeah. He's also a great gruff actor.
Yeah, so I think he would be able to find the balance between it. That kind of gives away my casting on the character. But that was kind of my approach, is to tie it into that. And there are magical objects already within the realm of Pirates of the Caribbean, so we could do that. No.
Yeah, it ties in really nicely, Jay. I think that's a really great way to sort of approach it without sort of taking away from the original movie that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Now, what if there was a treasure on this land and maybe Silky's after it? Now, I kind of wanted Silky to still be the main villain, but an unseen person is kind of guiding his hand, is like, I want you to find this object, this thing. And it wouldn't even be revealed until probably post-credit who that person was, which I'm sure you guys are probably thinking, like, oh, okay, it's probably Penelope Cruz, right? Yeah, it would be Penelope Cruz because she drank from the Fountain of Youth.
You know what?
And you wouldn't do it. It would set up a place where you're like, could you do a sequel? Sure. Would you? You don't need it, but it'd be a fun reveal nonetheless.
It's one of my biggest pet peeves are movies that just like assume that they're going to get a sequel when it's like trying to be its own new thing.
I always like to set it up like, here's your franchise, guys. It's that easy.
If you want to do it.
If you want to do it.
A lot of people have tried exactly that and failed pretty hard. It's true.
It is true. No, I like that actually. I like the idea that she spent all this time searching for her father's treasure. Mm-hmm. I think the idea of there not actually being a treasure still works really well though.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's wasted 200 years now.
Yeah, because she was a selfish person and blamed Jack for his death in the first place because she was willing to sacrifice her life for him, and then that's why he leaves her stranded on that island. She was a manipulator, and she was pulling scams through that whole movie, so that could be fun to see her as a out-and-out villain in this one.
Well, to be fair, when you have any movie with pirates in it, pulling scams the entire way should just be what you expect.
Exactly. No,
I mean, why the hell would anybody be surprised if you're a pirate? No, you're a pretty stupid pirate if you don't expect it.
Ooh, I just came up with something. Maybe she, after 250 year plus years after his death, because it would be modern day, so it'd probably be closer to a little over 300 years. Yeah. She's tired. The cutlass is the only thing that could end her life because it was a magical cutlass. That's how he unfurled the sails and directed the ship. It was this magical item.
Nice.
She's trying to recover the cutlass.
Love that.
Well, I don't know. That almost humanizes her too much if you want her to be the bad guy.
Well,
and I mean, really, the core of the story is also the relationship between Blackbeard and the dude. Like, where does the dude fit into all of this?
Yeah.
Like, this is just a sequel to Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well, right now, these are just the outward motivations of the villain. That stuff still works. You would keep that in its core. Like, that stuff doesn't need a whole lot of time on screen, right, to tell its story. So you still keep that central conceit of this guy coming to this town, trying to help out this inn and bring his team to success. If we still go with the track team, it could be any sport, really. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't even have to be a sport per se, but something that can help this inn succeed and raise money for this inn and to save it or bring some sort of attention to it. So
I think it still have to be sports because people don't bet big on anything but sports.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's also very visual for a ghost to mess around with.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be a track team or anything like that, but your central story still happens within those two characters, and we can change the gags, and it could be that fun kind of Gore Verbinski action comedy sequences as, you know, he's trying to run away with the cutlass or the ghost is messing with somebody who's trying to intimidate Dean Jones or just the cops and making people think he's crazy. All those gags still work, so I don't really want to change that too much. I'm just tying it to another franchise that sells Blackbeard as something even more, and it's familiar.
So, what do you think the budget would be for a movie like this? Because, well, I mean, for the Pirates of the Caribbean, they're would do famously this a lot of money.
Yeah, no, we're not doing it at a Pirates level, obviously. I mean, this would be a remake of a movie that people have kind of forgotten about, so you would not be throwing 150, 200 million at this. I'm figuring 45, 50 million.
Yeah, you don't need
you're not doing these big set pieces anymore. Your big set piece is the inn.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably your biggest intricate set piece. And it was in this movie, too.
Well, the outside of it was a matte painting.
Well, I mean, they would probably build it this time.
Oh, yeah.
If nothing else, they have something to put on Disneyland.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one thing actually we were surprised about is there's a lot of really fun ideas and a lot of really fun imagery in the movie. I'm surprised that none of that did end up in Disneyland in any way, shape, or form.
I'm trying to remember because there was still a lot of 60s era attractions when I went to Disneyland as a kid, but I don't remember anything relating to this movie, and I don't think there ever was.
Yeah.
Blackbird's Ghost, I was there in the like early 80s, but if I remember correctly, Black Beard's ghost does show up in the haunted house.
Oh, he might.
That,
yeah.
That was it. That's all I can recall.
Yeah, you might be right there. I think he might have, but I don't recall, despite the fact I rode that ride a bazillion times.
I've missed that ride every time I've been. Yeah, because they close the Haunted Mansion from October to December. So when you want to be Halloween-y, they make you go on a Christmas ride. It's very strange.
They close the Haunted Mansion at Halloween. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I know, and I get so mad about it every single time I've been there. Because we always go in October because that's the cheapest time to go whenever we save up to go. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're there and it's October. And especially this past year, it was like there was all this anniversary merchandise that they pumped out that was exclusive to Halloween time. But they closed the Haunted Mansion. They turn it into a Nightmare Before Christmas ride. They like put a skin over the whole thing.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know. It's the worst.
Shame on you, Disney.
So yeah, I've never actually been on the Haunted Mansion, even though I've been to Disneyland like four times.
It's like they're trying to support Universal Studios doing their haunted stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Go over to Universal's and enjoy Halloween there. Because you're not going to get it here. That's dumb. Dumb. Oh, boy. But, yeah, any thoughts from you guys? Like, that was kind of my idea for a remake. And, I mean, we could still have the curse and we could still have the spell book hidden somewhere. I mean, I was thinking a Cutlass. Doesn't have to be the Cutlass, but...
No, I like the Cutlass. I think that your idea is a great way to sort of add something new to it without changing the core of the story very much. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of Penelope Cruz being the real bad... like the real big bad.
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
and she didn't have to be a post credit scene either. You know, maybe it does result in maybe there's just a curse, this spell that can free her. And it's like, well, you can live this life and this will be your last one. Well, I don't know. Give it a happier, kind of a happy, sad ending.
That's part of Blackbeard's redemption arc, mm-hmm. is obtaining a forgiveness from his daughter.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, because he betrayed her, and yeah. I think somewhere deep down, that's probably really pissing her off.
I can say probably, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that would be sort of your happy, sad ending, where they both get to go rest in peace, right? Is they get that redemption, and they forgive each other, and they both go literally sail off into the sunset.
Yeah, together, back to the
sunrise, I guess it would be.
Yeah, back to the ghosty version of the Queen Anne's Revenge.
You could have a crazy twist where... like, she's pulling the strings, but she's actually, like, a ghost herself. Like, she's only ever in one area. She's, like, super mysterious, but, you know, like, that's just, like, that's where the gangster finds her in his search for the gold, and...
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I think she puts him on the search for the gold, not realizing there is no treasure. And she's, mm-hmm. and that's part of her story, is that she has been spent 300 years looking for a treasure that doesn't exist.
I would like it if she, other than Dean Jones, she can see him.
Yes.
She would be the only other person who could see Blackbeard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would add some good tension.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that could all happen at that end scene there at the casino where they're, whatever his name is, Sleazy.
Silky. Oh, my God. Silky. You're terrible with names.
I am today. Today particularly.
Sleazy seems more accurate, if that's okay.
Exactly. That's why it stuck in my head. But, yeah, when they have that scene where they go to collect their winnings, and that's where we get our reveal that Blackbeard's daughter is actually the one who's running the whole show, and she can see what Blackbeard's doing, but she can't stop him either for whatever reason. That we'd have to figure out what that device is, or you could have that conflict there. You could have that fun conflict where she's shouting at her dad, and nobody else can see it except for Steve.
Oh, mm-hmm. See, I went a different direction in my head when you mentioned that, where it's she has a sword fight, because I thought in this pirate movie a great lack of sword fights.
Mm.
And she could sword fight her own father, and it looks to the other guys like she's fighting nothing.
Except for a sword.
That would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. That would be fantastic. I like that better. It's better than the screaming match.
Also very funny.
Yes.
Very cool. Or, you know, if we want to have the ghosty, I think that one's great. Maybe we could have it in like, start out where she's attacking, like, the Dean Jones, Steve Walker character with the sword, and Dean's grabbed it and just kind of trying to block it. And that's what we actually get, a possession moment where Blackbeard pops into him.
I love it. You just gave me my idea. So it's not a track and field team. It's a fencing team.
Ooh.
I like that.
Especially now, fencing kind of is becoming quite popular again. it's showing up in movies a lot, and it's become a sort of a really great cardio activity that people are really enjoying. So why not?
I can get behind that. What's say the you rest of you?
I like it. And I also had another thing too, where it's like you have, you know, that adorable guy who's like bad at sports who meets Dean Jones at the beginning of the movie. Maybe have him, what I'd love to have them is be like kind of LARPers on the weekend doing pirate stuff.
That would be fun. I think that would add
Kind of cool. So the college students actually go there.
It's like wherever, because obviously Blackbeard is famous and would be famous and all this stuff. It's like they're all the dudes who, you know, work at one of the historical reenactment museums, which do exist. But he's like one of him and his friend who are actually really into it on their spare time as well, and like wear their costumes outside of work.
Adds a whole new factor to it.
You could grab, like, there's another couple of like sub characters. You could have like one of the girls that also goes to the college who's like really into Anne Bonny, and another one who's into Grace O'Malley, and you could like add,
or they're all just like, ugh, some of the, like, I mean, there'd have to be people who'd be like, ugh, pirates. Well, tourists are always here for pirates.
That's a great angle. I was just about to actually back you up on this one, is tourism's a big part of this town, and tearing down this inn for something else, they're trying to protect it and save it, and tearing it down would harm the tourism aspect, because there are some people who don't, like some of the older people who live here, who don't want the tourists in this town. They just want a quiet town.
Exactly.
And that would be a pretty good angle too.
And that's a real thing. Like even when I was younger, living in a smaller town that had like a pretty big tourist industry, you know, you'd sit in on town board meetings and they'd be like, you know, this part, I'm not a big fan of. I think what people would really love is cowboy poetry or something. But it's just because they want to do stuff that old people like that won't bring families or young people to the town, like a big museum.
And Church probably can relate, having grown up in Vulcan.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
yeah.
Vulcan was a whole thing. I remember when Vulcan wasn't the Vulcan we know as of now. I was in high school when Spock ears started to be sold at the Vulcan Village gas bar. I lived most of my life where Vulcan was just the Roman god of industry.
Mm-hmm.
That was all there was. So
no, it's this little town that's trying to claim Star Trek for their own.
It sort of is, but I mean, Star Trek has sort of backed it up. It's actually, Star Trek kind of embraced them. Like they were in the documentary. So it sort of happened, but right now I've been there and it's not, the outcome of it after a number of decades isn't what it used to be. Because it still is a small town. You have to become a bigger town to account for tourists coming through and wanting to stay. Mm-hmm.
But I've gone down and covered it a couple of times for various shows and talked to some of the Star Trek celebs. So yeah, it does attract a small amount, and it kind of relies on the bigger cities around it to even function.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, I think, it's sort of, it went big, but it should have gone, either you got to go bigger with the touristy stuff to make enough coin to make it worthwhile, or you don't. That's sort of where you kind of end up with some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, with small town tourism, especially, I feel like the goal is you attract families to your town for tourism, and some of them, a percentage of them, want to stay, and thus you sustain your community. But you know, a lot of people think that's dumb. I don't know.
Okay. Oh. Anything else you guys want to add to this film?
Yes. I've been waiting.
Okay, Sam.
So we talked about the fight with, like having a fight between Steve and Blackbeard's daughter and Blackbeard. And I just, while we were talking about it, I had this idea is that Blackbeard at one point at the end, to set up the final fight scene without her there present, is she can say, well, if you want my treasure, go follow that man. You'll see what my treasure is. And the treasure is his granddaughters and the hotel.
Oh, what a over sentimental Disney moment.
Isn't it wonderful?
It totally is.
Right. It gets her out. And the idea was, I was just thinking, we need to get her out of that venue for that fun final fight scene.
And
that was a great way to do it.
Mm-hmm. What you could have too is like, this is my treasure, these are like my granddaughters and all of that, but I mean, she's related to them.
Exactly.
So it'd be like, you have to meet them, they're your family.
Yes.
No, that's exactly what I was thinking, and that gets them both to that mortgage burning party where they can have that redemption moment between the two of them as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
So it sets up everything at the end there really nicely.
Yeah.
And yes, it is syrupy sentimental.
Oh, but we need that right now.
Yeah, I it bugs me when I hear that those kind of terms being thrown around about Steven Spielberg movies. Well, there's a reason why people watched them, and I had no problem with it. We don't get enough. Yeah, we don't have enough of that, and yeah. I am A-okay with that, and that still has the Disney seal of approval for me. So,
yeah, no, I agree, and that's why I suggested it, because, yeah, it does seem a little tropey, but it's also perfect for this version of the film that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Any you guys have any last-minute additions here before we get into some casting?
No.
Well, I would say, like, I like where we've gone with this, because I honestly had no idea, because I was starting with, I had a whole other vision, and I don't know if this could be like an alternate movie where this is not in the U.S. This is actually in Ireland, and it's the castle that Grace O'Malley had, who was a very famous pirate many, many years ago. And it's not so much a curse, but it's sort of like she's there protecting the whole place. After many, many years, because, I mean, she married this man, this aristocrat, and, like, this castle was her property. I mean, she met with the queen. She did all this crap. So it'd be like she didn't want to die, because she's like, I've done so much, I will continue to fight for what I feel is mine. And it was sort of that sort of arc where she couldn't let it go.
Yeah, that's the thing where you can transplant any real famous pirate in there if you want, but none are more famous than Blackbeard. Maybe Jack Sparrow these days, but...
Yeah. Well, Long John Silver, but that's because he's...
Treasure Island, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Treasure Island story has its own kind of nice saccharine ending, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to mess with that too much. He gets his redemption.
But... And I had all the thing of that... I can't remember the name of the Chinese pirate lady who was just amazing.
Yeah.
I was like... But I'm like, but she's already got everything she wants. I can't do anything with her.
Yeah. So, I mean, okay, good. We've got the pirate, and we've got Blackbeard actually having an arc himself where he's seeking something selfish for resurrection and then winds up giving it up for his own family. So I think that's great.
And he saves his legacy as well, which is the hotel and his grandchildren. So, yeah, there's sort of a double redemption there, and it actually feels a little more complete that way.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I guess we still haven't done much with Gudger, but I think you kind of filled out a little bit. We've changed it to the fencing team that's kind of useless. So this will be better.
Oh, yeah, the only thing I was going to say for fencing is it really severely limits the amount of gags that you can do with the ghost. But I mean,
that's true. You know, that does limit those gags.
It does, but I don't know if we need them. Like, that scene felt a little overlong.
Right. It was getting silly where he, like, okay, this is still a ghost of a human being, so should he be able to toss another human being like 20 feet in the air?
You know, that is all what I loved about that movie.
Well, that's something that I remembered about the movie, but I think that we've come up with more of a story, so we don't need quite so much gagginess.
Yeah, that's cartoon humor that regard. But yeah, I guess you don't need to spend as much time on doing those scenes. Yeah.
Well, for the explanation of like him tossing people, it's not until he's conjured that he can actually affect the physical world. Like, I mean, he takes the motorcycle, he hits the cop, he grabs the guns. I mean, he is a ghost, but he's a ghost who can manipulate
very
his world.
Very tactile and can manipulate physical objects, yeah.
Yeah, but I think you could still have a lot of fun with that, because you could have a few fencing matches where they get roundly defeated and then Blackbeard sort of takes control and trounces these guys. You could have two or three where he does these incredible fencing moves that just are so incredible, they're absurd almost.
But I would like to do a couple where Blackbeard does things which are not like illegal in fencing. Like he
flips over somebody?
He costs some points at certain points because he doesn't get the game of fencing as opposed to just real sword fighting.
Yeah, because he wouldn't have been a fencer, competitive fencer. He would have been a pirate who was out to kill people.
Exactly, yeah. So there are no rules at that point, right? You do what you need to do to win.
And that would explain your teacher going, stop helping.
Yes.
Your coach going, no, stop helping. And it would still play into the Dean Jones character with more motivation. Because I was like, your team is winning. Stop complaining about it.
And you know that there's a bed out there that could cost them the whole hotel.
Yeah, I was like, just shut up, man. Yeah.
It did make that character seem inordinately selfish, considering his characterization for the rest of the movie.
Well, they do have that selfish bit where he's like, I have to leave because, I mean, you won it for them and I didn't do anything. So because I didn't do anything, I have to leave.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted sort of them to become, at least Gudger, to become reasonably competent, that he did have that one success where he's maybe not winning, but he's at least competing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'd like them to be like, oh, yeah, now this is how it feels to make the right strike and make the right block. Mm-hmm. And sort of, weirdly, these possessions train them.
I mean, there was even a subplot that was really tiny subplot where the dean was thinking about getting rid of the track team entirely in favor of football, because that's what Purvis was pushing for. And if they didn't win this year, that would be it. There'd be no more track team for this college. So
yeah, and I kind of
could still happen with this as well. They need to win just so this sport still exists in this college.
Yeah. Well, I've kind of thought the feeling that there was supposed to be a subplot where Purvis was actually sabotaging the track team to a certain extent by telling like the real athletes that no, you can't join the track team if you want to be on the football team kind of mm-hmm. thing. Where he was actively trying to keep the team from being successful.
Yeah, you could have him where he's got like these third string guys that are never going to play, but they've got to be on the football team.
Well, what if Purvis is deliberately trying to sabotage that team for Silky's bets?
That too, you could have that. You could have him be even more reprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that. I don't mind adding that aspect to it.
And it would add to like how much control Silky has in this town.
Yeah, like you get the feeling there's nowhere he can't reach to.
Yeah, I like that idea.
All right, well, let's get into some casting, because I don't know mm-hmm. if there's much left we need to tackle here. I think we got something kind of fun there, and it's a kind of a weird little spinoff of a weird little Pirates movie. That
yes.
It's probably one nobody wants, but this is our show, so go to hell.
Or get on board.
Yeah, get on board or go away.
Literally, this is a ship. Get on board.
Jeff, do you want to start us off with some casting? This will be fun.
Yeah, so basically, what I would do, so this is to preface the casting. What I would do for this movie is I would have a pretty low budget kind of buddy rom-com, and I would have Alison Brie play not only Joanne Baker, but also Aldelpha Teach, like Blackbeard's wife, who is the witch who cursed him, kind of being like maybe she's a descendant, but kind of plays into later. And then the main character would be Bill Hader.
Yeah, I was actually thinking like something like Susan Plachette would be related mm-hmm. somehow to one of these old ladies as a granddaughter as well, to kind of have her more of a connection to this inn and mm-hmm. why she's trying to save it.
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, I was thinking for Steve Walker, the main character, Bill Hader, as kind of like a teacher who kind of, he's a track teacher, but he picks a small town thinking that it'll be easier because they're all farm kids or something. But, you know, the one that he assigns himself to is actually like really terrible because he's lazy and doesn't do his research. And as Blackbeard's ghost, I would have him play opposite possibly Fred Armisen as Blackbeard's ghost.
Nice.
And, I was also thinking that for Emily Stowcraft, who's the old woman who runs the museum, or who runs the, you know, the hotel slash museum slash ship place, to cast Barbara Steele, who's still alive. And she does the occasional thing still. And, you know, legendary actress Barbara Steele, but kind of in that older role, similarly, mm-hmm. you know, to Elsa Lancaster being Bride of Frankenstein, I thought may evoke similar things.
Cool.
Maybe a character that's a bit more of like a play on the dramatic characters that she used to play.
Right.
I was thinking for Silky, Michael C. Hall.
I really like that.
Yeah, especially as like the kind of like overly masculine, but kind of like, you know, kind of like he's like the classic high school bully, but the greasy fedora hat wearing version of that, because he could still, you know, rock a pencil mustache if he wanted.
Oh, yeah. Just put the pencil mustache on Dexter. Done.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That'd be a good bad guy.
I was thinking that the dean of the school would be J.K. Simmons.
And, I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I'll be surprised. It would be surprised if everybody else did it, too.
And I was...
Okay, yeah, no, I did the exact same thing with Dean Simmons.
I mean, you know, he's a great teacher character.
Or Dean Wheaton, yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking that for the football coach, I was thinking it would be Seth Meyers, who's basically a guy who comes in thinking that he can game the system, and he comes in with, you know, he's trying to moneyball it. And I was thinking that the movie would be directed by Akiva Schaffer, who, you know, is from The Lonely Island and did Hot Rod and a bunch of other movies. And I think that that kind of quirky energy with maybe a light romantic plot with Bill Hader and the main character would be fun. But also with Blackbeard's ghost being afraid of her because she looks like the witch who cursed him and not wanting him to talk with her. And so there would be lots of he's trying to go out on a date with this beautiful woman that likes him for some reason, but Blackbeard is trying to mess up his dates and kind of go in more that direction.
I do like that. I wouldn't mind actually to insert some of that. Actually, that would be kind of cool. So if Steve Walker, the Dean Jones character, was going out a date with Susan Plachette, but Blackbeard knew that Susan Plachette was a distant relation. Mm-hmm. He might not want that. This is my great, 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 great granddaughter you're messing with.
Yeah.
So that could be fun to see that and add some new gags.
Yeah, because especially, I mean, there's a lot of material right there between two comedians sitting down, having conversation, trying to have a nice date. But another comedian is, you know, causing it to go afoul. There's you know, a lot of, you could really milk that and have some good day. You know, you could have an act of a movie that takes place around something like that.
Yeah.
Well, that would fill in some of the jokes that we're losing with the fencing as well, right? You'd sort of sacrifice some comedy in one spot to add it in another.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can do, you know, there's one person who's invisible, who one person can see and one person who can't, and a person who's invisible, who's messing with stuff. There's a lot of comedic potential there, which is partially why I loved this movie so much.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got.
Sam, why don't you go next?
Oh, okay. I will. Happily. So, I mean, obviously I cast prior to our remake discussion as usual. So assuming that we were staying with a fairly similar story and not tying it into the Pirates of the Caribbean series, my Blackbeard, I went with Nick Frost. I think he would make a great Blackbeard.
Oh, remember when I told you before we started recording, I had two people cast for...
He was your other one?
He was my other one. So now everybody knows both my Blackbeards.
Sorry. For my Steve Walker, I went with Sam Rockwell. He's so versatile. I think he could play sort of the straight-laced guy quite well, even though he doesn't typically.
That's so good, yeah.
For my Joanne Baker, I went with Gabrielle Union because she plays sort of the intelligent... strong woman really, really well, probably because she is an intelligent, strong woman. For my Emily Stowcroft, I cast Betty White.
Nice.
That works good.
I also cast some of the other daughters. I thought it'd be just fun to have actresses like Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, Angela Lansbury, like Joan Plowright, all playing these sort of great granddaughters of Blackbeard. And you can have a lot of fun with the interaction between all of these sort of great classic actresses.
I've got that too, and I've got a different list, but I think we could have some fun with this.
That's good. I wish I would have thought about doing that, actually.
For my Silky Seymour, I was Steve Buscemi.
It's good. It's
because it's kind of typecasting because he's done the sort of the slimy gangster type before, but he's so good at it. Why not, right? For my Dean Wheaton, I went with Forrest Whitaker. I thought that he would be great. And the reason I picked him specifically because he frequently plays a football player, and I wanted to play into that bit where he says, "I hate football. I've always hated football."
So nice.
it was just that joke, and it's the joke that only I would get.
That's
but I
perfect.
Wanted it.
you threw in a joke just for you.
Yeah, absolutely. For Pinetop Purvis, I cast John C. Reilly because I think that he is one of those really versatile actors who could do really well with, and especially with the changes we've made, I think he'd make a great sort of slimy, underhanded football coach.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually my other Blackbeard. Just kind of based off of a little bit the ghost of Stonewall Jackson that he played in Anchorman 2.
There we go. Yes. Yeah, he would make a great Blackbeard, actually. I also cast the TV commentator because it's one of the few things that he's really good at. I cast Rob Schneider because if you want the sarcastic TV announcer, he's the go-to, even though I don't particularly like him in any other role. And then for my director, I went with Mark Waters. He's done some Disney stuff. He did Freaky Friday, the Freaky Friday remake. He also did Mean Girls and Mr. Popper's Penguins, all which were great family films.
Yeah, Mean Girls was great.
Yeah, it was.
Especially, like, that's a really big cult movie.
Yeah, and Mr. Popper's Penguins was fun. I mean, and it was a great family affair, and it's a right balance of pathos and comedy.
Like, do you like penguins? Do you like antics? You'll like this movie.
Yeah, yeah, and it worked for me. I thought it didn't get very well reviewed, but
it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I like that movie too.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to Trish's cast here.
Hey, everybody. Okay, so this is before I did cast Blackbeard, but I also cast a Grace O'Malley because I wasn't quite sure where we were going with this. So I'll start with my Grace O'Malley. I had Amy Adams because I thought she'd be good as a female pirate, but also very funny. And then Blackbeard, I went younger than everybody. Just because I think Robert Sheehan, I've been watching Umbrella Academy, and I think this man was born to play a pirate, just like a charming pirate. And then I've got Steve Walker. For Steve Walker, I have Ty Burrell from Modern Family.
Fine. I was actually thinking of him, too. Classic dad vibes.
That's what I was thinking. Like, he's kind of got that Dean Jones-ish sort of, like, yeah, every man, but I'm a coach vibe.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That I really liked. Joanne Baker, I went with Sanaa Lathan. She was in Alien versus Predator. She's also done a lot of voiceover work and was in the Best Man series. And I've seen her in like other secondary roles in movies, but I think she's really good because I always remember her. And then we'll get to Silky Seymour. I went with James Spader. Cause,
not too bad.
Yes.
He can do slimy and evil and I love it.
Yeah, but then you're going to have to put in some creepy sex stuff.
You don't have to. It's going to be implied because I'm going to have him hitting on the daughters of the Buccaneers. Oh, what
old. he would probably love that.
I think he would. I think he would lean into it. For my, I'll save the daughters for last. I've got, for Pine Top, I had Michael Rooker, because he makes a good bad guy and gruff and evil.
That's good.
And I didn't do the Dean, because I don't know, I kind of liked him, but he just had such a secondary role. I didn't even think of him. So, but I love J.K. Simmons as a Dean, so I love that casting. And then for Gudger, I went with Alfred Enoch of Maze Runner because he just has that kind of like, just, I don't know. I just want to squeeze his cheeks. I don't know what the deal is.
Nice.
And then for the Daughters of the Buccaneers, I didn't, because part of this I got to is I didn't know who to cast for Emily Stowcroft because I had so many ideas and I didn't know who to go with. So I just went with a lot of them. Shelley Long, Susan Sarandon, Gina Davis, Sigourney Weaver and Mary Steenburgen.
Those are all really good. that also sounds like the Daughters of Blackbeard can kick some serious ass.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was the
whole
point.
There should be a movie called Daughters of Blackbeard.
Well, I kind of wanted some of them to be like, they are very proud of their pirate heritage, so they know how to sword fight. And part of some of their fundraising was like sword fighting lessons. And they like to have the LARPers around and teach them or other people who wanted to stay at the inn. Like at the beginning thing, I thought at some reason I couldn't figure out at that casino night why they didn't have like, I don't know, some sort of sword fighting demonstration. I know they're old ladies, but why wouldn't you do that?
No, that sounds good.
And my director was Edgar Wright. Cause
when Sam mentioned Nick Frost, I immediately thought, well, you know what? You could just go a whole other complete different direction and make this an Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, Simon Pegg movie. Simon Pegg is the track coach. And then, you know, just go from there.
But you could totally do that. But, was it Mark Heap? I think I would like to have him as either the coach. You'd have to put him as the dean and then make it a whole spaced universe.
Exactly.
With Jessica Stevenson as the professor.
Oh, I mean, there you go.
Nice. I like it. Okay, well, let's fire mine off here. Of course, Blackbeard, we already know. If we would have just kept it as its own thing, and if I wanted to have a kind of a cute roly-poly one like this movie had, then yes, Nick Frost would have been my man. And, of course, I had the Pirates idea, so yes, Ian McShane was my other choice. For my Steve Walker, at the time I didn't know what the sport was going to be, but I thought, damn, Dean Jones, you don't look like you do sport. So I went with somebody like Chris Evans. I mean, he's going to have slimmed down now that he doesn't want to work out so damn hard to be Captain America. So he'd still be fit, but I think he'd be a good young coach for this team. Somebody who's established and maybe have done some sports as well, and it would be nice conflict with Purvis. For my Joanne Baker, I went with Christina Ricci. We haven't seen her. I haven't seen her in a while anyway in anything I watch, so I thought she would be kind of fun to put in here. And
that's fantastic.
Add a little bit of, I mean, you could easily throw some Tim Burton kind of gothicness in this movie if you wanted to. I didn't go with him as a director, but he would be good. For my Emily Stowcroft, I went with Meryl Streep because she's actually worked with my director, and I would love to see her do like the goofy fortune-telling stuff. So that something about that character was so over the top, and I'm like, man, she would just have so much fun doing that part. Of course, we know my Dean Wheaton was J.K. Simmons, just because I wanted to see him as a bit of an asshole, because I've never seen him really be an asshole in a movie. For my Pine Top Purvis, I went with Terry Crews, because he certainly looks like somebody who'd be a football coach.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see him be kind of a dick, too, and see how he would play with that a little bit. So could be fun. And he probably would respond to some of the hijinks rather well, because he's got some good comedic chops, right? For my Silky, I went with Michael Shannon.
Very nice.
He might be a little too scary for this movie, but given that we kind of went with the Pirates angle, I think he fits. For Gudger, I went with Freddie Highmore from Bates Motel. So, decent, experienced leading man, but still very young, so he would feel like natural college level. And of course, Penelope Cruz hiding in the background as the puppeteer of Silky. And for my director, I decided, since he did direct that Pirates movie, Stranger Tides, director Rob Marshall, but he's a Disney guy himself. He did Into the Woods, Mary Poppins Returns, Chicago, Memoirs of a Geisha. Some of these are very well received, just because you didn't like them.
Well, I mean, the first two. I mean, Into the Woods was very, very terrible. Oh, my goodness.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I didn't even finish it.
To be fair, Into the Woods is bad because it's one of the, it's that musical style where nothing is said and all of it is sung, and you have to be a very specific person to do it or to enjoy it.
You can find the original Broadway musical online, and it's really amazing, actually.
Oh, see, because I hated that part. I couldn't deal with it. I was like, just somebody say a word that isn't sung, and I will be happy.
I wish I would have cast all the little old ladies, but that was that would have been fun to do. I didn't think about that. That's
you don't have to. Trish and I cast them all.
Yeah, you really did.
I think we combined. Yeah, Sam, you and I, we combine our two bits. We've got a kick-ass Daughters of the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, that whole town's of the Daughters of the Buccaneers.
That's why they need more people to come to the town.
Yeah, there you go. The whole town's just nothing but Blackbeard's daughters. All right, well, that was Blackbeard's Ghost. Something a little unusual, something fun, especially after last week's Martyrs episode. We really needed something really decompress from that particular episode. I'm still decompressing from that episode.
That was a huge shift in tone.
Yeah.
0 to 500.
Yeah.
500 to zero.
Yeah, so we've done our 250th episode. We're right in between. Next week's our 5th anniversary officially, and we'll bring a nice comparison there as well. One that you will be awfully familiar with, I think. I think it'll be a good way to begin our 6th year of Invasion of the Remake. Tell everybody, your friends, your family, the dog, your enemy across the street. Tell them all about Invasion of the Remake and direct them to the show. Just tell them to find us on whatever favorite podcast provider they use. If they don't listen to podcasts, help them out. Send them to our Wix site, which is our central hub. Sam, what's the Wix site address?
It is invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And you can find links to all the major podcast providers, or at least the top 6. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. We're introducing new ones all the time. We're going to be on Audible and Amazon Music soon, guys. And we're on Ghana already in India. And boy, that one's already starting to take off. So I'm happy to see that. And welcome our foreign audience into the fold. Follow us on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake podcastsystem@gmail.com if you want to email us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments, or your fan challenges. We do have a few waiting in the wings that we will do once we're clear of our anniversary month here, and we will start getting back to some of the fan challenges. We'll see them in over the next few months and have some fun with some of your choices for things you want to see us remake. But keep those challenges coming. We're happy to get them, and we only ask that the movies are accessible. Tell us where to find them, and give us a good reason why we should cover them. We don't want to do anything like super recent, so they should still kind of follow what our choices usually are, something kind of forgotten, or something that didn't strike with crowds the first time, but had the nugget of a good idea and might have some potential. So that's the kind of stuff we're looking for. We don't want to see that hit movie that maybe you didn't quite like, but most people did. That's not quite what it is. And if it was just in the theater a few months ago, well, I guess nothing was in the theater a few months ago, but you know what I mean? Under normal circumstances, if it had just hit the theater, we're not going to cover really recent stuff, even if it's a dog, just because, you know, you don't want to kick them when they're down. Just give them some time to breathe and give it a decade or two, and then it might be worth revisiting if we're still here.
You know, that was the whole thing too. Sometimes there's movies that that didn't get great critical reception upon release, but have since become beloved favorites.
Mm-hmm. You got to give it some time. Sometimes time will shift perception often. So, but do yourself a favor and find Blackbeard's Ghost over on Disney Plus. And there's lots of movies like this in these old Disney family films. There's all over Disney Plus right now, and they're well worth the time of rediscovery. And there's a good chance we will start covering some more of those in the future. So let us know if there's any of those live actions you would like us to tackle.
For those of you who don't have Disney Plus, like, I think this was on YouTube as well, and Google Play. Just so I know, there's a lot of on Disney Plus, but if you don't don't feel bad that we're pushing Disney Plus. It's still available in other places.
Oh yeah, you can. I'm sure there's plenty of other streaming platforms where you can do a quick VOD. I'm sure you could probably rent it on PlayStation for 99 cents or something like that. So lots of ways to watch these things. Just find out whatever's best for you. I'm just urging you to do so because it's good shit. It's good shit. Sure. And don't forget to visit our TeePublic store. We got lots of great merch over there right now. You can be that person who was in that thing that one time. We've got masks, and you can get our images on cups and pillows and art prints and all sorts of cool stuff. It's another way you could support the show. We get a bit of dollars thrown back at us from TeePublic for that. And it's just some cool, comfy merch that I've got a shirt, and Sam just got one this week, and we're really happy of the quality of the shirts. So they're comfortable shirts. Do yourself a favor and grab some fun Invasion merch and support the show and show that you love the podcast by doing so.
Yeah, yay.
thanks for pausing for that.
Oh, boy.
Okay, well, that's it for Blackbeard's Ghost from 1968. We'll be back here next week with a comparison. Until next week, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I always come back as Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
Here. I go now to a distant and I hope hospitable shore. I beg of you, take notice of this. I, Edward Teach, Captain, affectionately known as Blackbeard, was not all bad. Look after this boy. He needs help. they will. Lad.
Goodbye, Cap.
We will not meet again. Oh, beware all wenches.